So, Max, you were telling me about this schism or this difference, this divide in the administration right now about their strategy towards Iran. Obviously, the U.S. hasn't struck Iran in 3 days, and there are differing camps in the administration about how to approach that. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, the schism is over something that wouldn't surprise you. Who is functioning as a proxy for Israel? And who is at least modestly attempting to represent American interests. And it's becoming a split actually within the Pentagon, which is really interesting. Publicly, you have CENTCOM commander Bradley Cooper warning of a munitions shortage, and Dan Kane, who is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you know, the brass, the Pentagon brass, also saying the same thing, that there are not enough munitions to sustain this war indefinitely, and that they have expended all their targets in the Strait of Hormuz, failed to dislodge Iran's control over the Strait of Hormuz, and now they need a pause. They're not just talking about standoff munitions like Tomahawks. They're also talking about interceptors and claiming that, you know, regional allies and U.S. assets in the region could be in danger, as could Israel, if they escalate against Iran and do what Trump had proposed, which is, and Rubio had proposed, which is, you know, a bridge and oil plant for every ship that Iran strikes. They just can't do it. But here's what's interesting. Ben Shapiro, who's one of the biggest, you know, Zionist tools in the media, whose whole Daily Wire is basically astroturfed by Israeli proxies, is out there along with Mark Levin, someone who's even closer to Trump, the Fox News carnival barker, declaring that the U.S. needs to escalate, even drop a nuclear weapon on Iran. That's the America first thing to do, is to totally destroy Iran, not acknowledging that they can't do it. So Ben Shapiro released this rant. He said, you know, it's acceptable that we've had these four American soldiers die and that, you know, scores and scores are getting wounded. That's what happens in war. We should just destroy Iran. Tucker Carlson responded to him and mocked him as a chicken hawk who's representing Israeli interests over Americans. But if you read closely into Tucker's reply, he said something that I initially missed, which is that Brad Cooper, the CENTCOM chief, is actually being privately advised by Mark Dubowitz. Who is Mark Dubowitz? He's basically Israel's top guy on K Street at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, which was originally founded as EMET, E-M-E-T, a organization which in its original founding documents said its goal was to enhance Israel's image in the United States. It's basically Israel's main think tank that has devised every aspect of this war. And according to Tucker, the head of CENTCOM is being advised by this top Israel lobbyist to escalate against Iran. And I circled back to Tucker and I asked him, like, how do you know this? He told me he has a high-level administration source. Actually makes sense. In February of 2023, before Brad Cooper was CENTCOM chief, when he was in the Navy, he was hosted by the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. His predecessor back then at CENTCOM, Michael Carilla, was known as Israel's favorite general. And he has, you know, gone on to promote Israel since he's left. He did everything Israel wanted when he was there, visited Israel constantly. So Israel has, and FDD have this record, along with other Zionist think tanks like JINSA, of cultivating top-level military figures. And now Mark Levin takes to Twitter X and said, I'm reading it right now, I hear Cooper is raring to go, but Kane is not. So that might actually be a serious divide here, not just within the administration, but within the Pentagon. Why doesn't Dan Kane want to go in? Well, it just makes sense. He actually was leaking to the Washington Post and New York Times before Operation Epstein Fury began on February 28th that there weren't going to be enough munitions. Okay, let's go back to that point. The U.S. had 3,000 to 4,000 Tomahawk missiles in its total arsenal by that point, February 28th, before they launched the war. They fired 27 Tomahawk missiles to assassinate Ayatollah Ali Khamenei at his compound, which I recently visited outside in Tehran. By early April, the U.S. had used 800 Tomahawk missiles, almost a quarter of its entire supply. It was burning through Tomahawks at a record rate. And it was starting to dip into its supply of JASSM missiles. Why were they using all these standoff munitions? Because they were afraid to loiter jets over Iran, because they would be shot down by Iran's kind of ambush-style Majid anti-aircraft system. And we saw it land some serious hits. I mean, it's the first anti-aircraft system to hit F-35. So now you have a problem where there aren't enough standoff munitions. They can't loiter jets over Iran because they fear losing the pilots. And their bases are being destroyed on the ground by Iran's ballistic missiles. The Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar has been totally evacuated. And Iran is now hitting their bases in Jordan. What does that mean? That means they have to pull back their in-air refueling tankers even further, which they would need to refuel jets to take out Iranian air defenses. And so they can't actually, they're struggling to launch offensive operations, and they're rationing interceptors at these bases. We've learned that they're actually allowing Iranian ballistic missiles through, and the Khaibar Shaikan ballistic missile has been increasing in accuracy enormously since the war started. So this is another massive strategic defeat for the U.S. as it's paused these strikes for the last 3 days. And the Israel lobby and basically Israel's forces inside the United States are clinging to the hope that CENTCOM Chief Brad Cooper will be that much of a tool that he will defy all logic and the cold, hard calculus of munition stocks to go back in and attack Iran. And Israel needs the United States to do that, because any deal that Trump strikes with Iran, any deal harms Israel's interests.
Yeah, that's really remarkable. And like you're saying, it sort of, it's not even that Dan Kane or these people who are speaking against or cautioning against a strike are ideologically even opposed to attacking Iran, or that they're, you know, pro, they're not pro Iran or anything like that, but that they're just saying, hey, we don't even have the munitions to do it. I mean, it's not even in the realm of possibilities for us. But like you're saying, Israel and FDD are pushing the U.S. to do something that strategically, I mean, is not even, it defies all logic for the self-interest of the United States. And this ties into another thing that just happened, which is this Ukrainian attack on Iranian ships. I mean, obviously Ukraine's been embroiled in a, you know, conflict that's taken 2 million lives at this point. And one of the big themes was the shortage of munitions and Ukraine's shortage of weaponry. It's constantly trying to field more supplies and capital from the European Union, from America. But now they're attacking Iran. Why are they trying to deepen the conflict?
Well, I've said from the beginning to pro-Palestine liberals who had no analysis at all of imperialism that if you're supporting Ukraine and you're calling for U.S. aid to Ukraine, you're supporting the same system of imperial hegemony that has doomed Palestinians to refugee camps and to siege in Gaza. Ukraine and Israel are objectively on the same side, and now it's very clear. Although ideologically, Ukraine might not necessarily be doing this out of Zionist ideology, it has positioned itself as a big Israel in Eastern Europe. In the words of former U.S. ambassador to Israel under Obama, Dan Shapiro, in order to appeal to America's desire to weaken Russia and to maintain U.S. support. Now, that was much easier under Biden. You know, in this town in Washington, you could walk outside during the height of the Ukraine proxy war and just see Ukraine flags everywhere. They're still around. They're just everywhere in, you know, these liberal neighborhoods where people are federal workers. Trump comes in and promises an end to the proxy war within 24 hours. Obviously, he wasn't going to do that. He's now fully invested in it. But there's a situation for Ukraine where they feel like they have scored some kind of tactical advantage using drone swarms to hit Russian oil infrastructure and cause an oil crisis in Russia. But they're not able to actually hold territory in the Donbass, and their interceptor stocks are running low. Why? Because the empire is overstretched. whether it's Biden or Trump who's there, Patriot batteries are being repositioned from Ukraine to Israel, along with THAAD missile systems, along with all sorts of munitions that the U.S. can no longer supply to Ukraine. Why? Because the Israel lobby controls the Trump administration. Ukraine is, you know, at best a junior partner now. So how do you get back on Trump's side? The road to Washington runs through Tel Aviv. So attack Iran. Attack Iran through its shipping and try to lure Iran into some kind of peripheral battle. Esmail Baghai, the spokesman for the Iranian Foreign Ministry, has likened these Ukrainian attacks to the attacks by anarchists prior to World War I in order to draw the great powers into a larger war. And Dmitry Peskov, Putin's spokesman, has said that he agrees with Baghai's analysis. And I agree as well. Ukraine is trying to demonstrate to Trump that it's actually on the Zionist side in order to guarantee that it can maintain some enough munitions to be able to hold off this Russian offensive, which is gaining territory. And I mean, they're not able to intercept these Russian missile attacks on Kiev. For the same reason, this is also why Ukraine invited Laura Loomer, the racist, fascistic, maniacal MAGA bigot who is said to be close to Trump, who has flown on Air Force One, who up until like 2 weeks ago was attacking me, probably on behalf of her Israeli clients, calling for me to be arrested, and was calling for the U.S. military to massacre millions of Muslims attending the funeral in Tehran of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. I mean, she's someone who's widely hated in the U.S. You would never meet a Laura Loomer fan. But she's supposedly close to Trump, and she obviously is representing Israeli interests. And so that's why they invited her. And according to the former Ukrainian opposition lawmaker Anatoly Shari, she was paid as much as $2 million. She's acknowledged she had donors who brought her there. So Ukraine is widening the war, threatening World War III in order to maintain some loyalty from Trump. And it's doing so by participating in what is effectively a war for Israel against Iran.
And I think, you know, really interesting point you make is it really does seem like this attempt by the bipartisan military industrial complex to bring together this coalition of people who support Ukraine, but maybe didn't like what Israel is doing, and people who support Israel, but were maybe critical of Zelensky and Ukraine, to sort of bring them together, just clearly now on the same side, fighting the larger, you know, enemies of U.S. imperialism. And it really does bring that meme together of the, you know, Ukraine-Palestine activist has kind of been silenced at this point.
yeah, you don't see those flags and too many people's emojis anymore together.
No. I had a neighbor 2 years ago who had the Ukraine-Palestine flag. I wanted to knock on his door, but I never got around to it. But, you know, so obviously, I mean, and this all kind of seems to be cultivating now in this, in this moment, both Zelensky and Netanyahu are visiting Trump. And, you know, I want to get your perspective. What do you think they're going to be asking from the president?
Well, I think Trump wants some kind of deal. The politics are becoming too burdensome for him. And Lindsey Graham's dead. There's this new Wall Street Journal. I think it's a Wall Street Journal documentary showing Lindsey Graham in his office the day Trump attacked Iran, and it's very dark. And he's talking about how Trump actually enjoys blowing things up, and he's smiling, and you can see he's almost deriving libidinal erotic satisfaction from what happened that day, which was actually the massacre of 168 schoolgirls and their teachers in Minab. Several massacres were carried out that day. Totally sick man. Netanyahu's coming to pay homage to Lindsey Graham, to come to his funeral. It happens to be timed for this week. Lindsey Graham was someone who was functioning as an unpaid foreign agent of Israel, who would go to Tel Aviv and ask and tell Netanyahu how to reach Trump. And so Netanyahu is going to draw on that knowledge that he got from Lindsey Graham to reach Trump. Let's go back to the Biden era. Students at Columbia are protesting. You're filming the encampments. Netanyahu demands that Joe Biden and his administration call out the National Guard and enact a Kent State massacre on American students. And I was sitting in the State Department briefing room, and Matthew Miller, then the spokesman, was asked, why won't he, will he condemn that? And he refused to condemn, like the Biden administration had instructions not to condemn Netanyahu for calling on the U.S. federal forces to massacre American students for protesting a genocide supposedly being carried out by a foreign army. I mean, that just shows you how much control he had over the Biden administration, that they wouldn't just, I mean, imagine if Putin had done that. Right now, Netanyahu is going to New York as well as Washington, and he and his proxies, his Israel first, or you could call them Israel only proxies in the U.S., are waging a campaign of violent incitement against the New York mayor for calling for enacting the ICC warrant against Netanyahu. It is shocking what they're doing. They're actually calling in so many ways for someone to take out Mamdani, Sid Rosenberg, this drug-addled shock jock who looks like a hot dog that had been cooked at a gas station hot dog stand for too long, was on Fox News and calling Mamdani a terrorist and a jihadist. And he said, we have to find a way to get rid of this guy somehow. It actually shocked even the Fox News anchors. And we see like administration officials, like the number three at the Department of Justice, Harmeet Dhillon, who's supposedly in charge of their civil rights division, endorsing what he said. She, through her law firm, is representing an Israeli foreign agent known as Show Faith by Works, which is currently geofencing churches for Israel. So the administration is filled with these Israeli tools, and Trump, like literal tools, and Trump is surrounded by them. But Netanyahu had his war. He convinced, okay, let's go back to February. Why did I bring up those two incidents before I do that? Just to show how much meddling Israel gets away with and the level of control they have over this administration. No other country would be able to incite violence against a elected U.S. official like they're doing against Mamdani. And then you had Netanyahu on his, I think, seventh visit to the U.S. last February, right before the war began. He marched into the Situation Room in the White House, sat at the head of the table, which has never happened under Trump. Trump sits to the side. He brings in David Barnea, then the Mossad director, on a screen behind him, and they tell Trump, this is what we're going to do. We're going to assassinate Ali Khamenei. He's having this meeting on February 28th with his staff, and then the Iranian people will rise up, and the Kurds will come in, and we'll topple the Islamic Republic, and we'll have an Iranian Delcy Rodriguez come in. And Trump said, okay, I'll give it a shot. He gave it a shot. It totally failed. Oil is now spiking above $100 a barrel. As we talked about in the beginning, the Strait of Hormuz campaign has failed. What does Netanyahu have to offer Trump? Not much. And Donald Trump doesn't seem to want to wage a joint campaign with Israel, although Israel might somehow get involved. Israel failed, by the way, in its 12-day war with Iran alone and needed the U.S. to rescue it back in June 2025. So it doesn't look good for Israel, but they have to keep the war going. The objective for Trump started out as regime change, freedom. Then he threatened Iran to destroy Iran's civilization, and it became about removing their nuclear dust, as he called it. Now it's about opening the Strait of Hormuz and returning to the status quo ante from before February 28th. There's no clear goal. It seems like he needs an exit ramp. But for Netanyahu, the goal is to keep the war going because the objective for Israel is state destruction. They need Iran to just be totally destroyed. They couldn't care less if millions and millions of refugees flow out of Iran. They'll go to Europe. They won't go to Israel. They'll go to the U.S. and Canada. They couldn't care less about damage to the world economy. They're the world's biggest welfare queen. The U.S. has to still calculate some of these negative knock-on effects from the war. So Netanyahu is here for one reason and one reason only, which is just to keep the war going somehow, some way. And he's going to try to dupe Trump into starting the war again. And he's going to be working through figures like Mark Dubowitz, who is advising Bradley Cooper, to try to get the war going without adequate interceptor stocks. And what I see happening is Trump will eventually cave to some of this, and it could escalate again. It's already escalating around Yemen through the Saudi siege and the Ansar Allah counter siege of Saudi shipping. It could escalate in Iraq, where the new prime minister is trying to disarm the resistance by this February, by this September. But ultimately, it's going to wind up as a battle around Israel, because the U.S. is going to have to reposition all of its forces back into Israel as the Iranian campaign of debasification continues apace with great success. And so the final fight will ultimately be around the apartheid colony of Israel.
It's worth pointing out, I think a lot of people misunderstand, how could Israel exert such influence? How could such a small country exert such influence over such a larger country? But it's exactly like you said, you know, concentrated amounts of money deployed strategically to certain key individuals, certain institutions, goes a long way. And I mean, I didn't know that about this idea of Israel's favorite general, this former CENTCOM general. I mean, the idea that that even exists in the United States, you would think that would be an outrage. This would be, you know, something, a headline in every newspaper, but no one really talks about it. And like you're saying, you know, it's gotten to this point. You have Israelis or Zionists calling for, you know, taking out mayors of American cities, calling in the National Guard, going to wars that we literally do not have the munitions to fight. I saw a headline, Lockheed Martin is now, they're in a joint partnership with GM, the car manufacturer, to make more of these Patriot missiles, THAAD missiles. I mean, it feels like we're now like orienting our entire economy around shifting our production to, you know, keep this war drive going and
to defend Israel.
Exactly. It's like
Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, actually had to eliminate or fire the Pentagon weapons inspection team, which is in charge of making sure that weapons are of high quality and will actually reach their targets, because he said they're slowing down production rates because they need to race them to Israel, because the U.S., again, it's run out of standoff munitions. And then on the point of just how extensive the Israel lobby's program goes, how deep it goes, there was an interview I saw today, or a clip of an interview with Greg Bovino. Remember him? He was the commander in chief of the Border Patrol.
Who wore that like SS like long coat and was, you know,
And then, but then he like tried to throw a tear gas canister, but he actually threw kind of like a girl. He was like, he would. Asked about his, you know, was it true that Israel trained the Border Patrol? And he said, actually, in 2000, 2001, we were taken down to a training session and it was all Israeli trainers and they were really good. And they gave us the best training we ever had.
Agent with Border Patrol Tactical Unit, they sent me to a VIP security school and it was ran by the Israelis. And let me tell you,
IDF actually does work with Border Patrol in ICE, because I've always heard that.
Well, it was that school was for all law enforcement.
So even before 9/11, he was being prepared. I mean, yeah. It's extensive. JINSA, I mentioned them before, the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. They've brought thousands of military officers, literally thousands, to training sessions. The ADL, they've brought hundreds and hundreds of cops and military officials to Israel. And they don't, a lot of these guys don't, they don't have, any other framework for understanding the conflict. So it makes a real impact on them, and, you know, we can see it playing out, but now it's also just straight up enticement through the most corrupt administration in history. Pam Bondi, I mean, one of the first things she does is get rid of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Division at the DOJ, weakens FARA protections, 'cause she was the top lobbyist for Qatar. And makes it that much easier for people in the administration to function effectively as foreign agents. And then you have the whole MAGA verse of influencers. I mean, who's paying them? It's the most aggressive, largest foreign meddling campaign in history being run through Trump's former chief of staff, Brad Parscale. So it's all coming to a head now. Bribery, intimidation, lies, deceptions, manipulation versus the cold, hard reality that this war has failed and that Iran has fought off a fading empire.